Lamed Menachem Av, Rosh Chodesh Elul, Tuesday the 26th of August, Rabbi Noach Olowek, the world of a home, the world of a Jew.
I thank you, Rabbi Shalom, for giving me the privilege again of coming here, and of you wanting me to come here. I want to introduce my words with a concept. If something is true, it's going to be true in more than one place. There are two types of messages that we give people and that we give ourselves. One is the verbal message, the words that I use. And the other is the below-the-surface, non-verbal message, which is much more powerful. And I'll explain why. You know, you tell a child, it's blowing outside, it's cold, let's say an 8-9-year-old child, don't forget to put your coat on. The verbal message was, don't forget to put your coat on. The nonverbal message is, I don't think you're very bright. You know, in advertising, they have Coca-Cola, for instance, puts all over the world signs that say, drink Coca-Cola. In Israel, there was once an advertising campaign that says, Yesh Coca-Cola, Yesh Hayim. With this Coke, there's life. I look at that and I say, no, it's quite not true. It's not true. Where does Coke? Is that life? And when you tell me to drink Coke, I will say no. But there's another message. It's a subliminal message, which is illegal on a screen. But you see that Coca-Cola sign so many times, you don't see it anymore. And then that's when the message goes in. Because the difference in a verbal message and a subliminal message is the verbal message I can push away. I can say no. But the subliminal message, my defenses aren't up. The Tazra Shiva's Chan Levach, Rabbi Yosef Leib Bloch, when he talks about the Seder, he talks about all the remazim, all of the hints that are vested in the Seder night. And says, why don't we just say things obviously? So he says, because it's the subliminal messages that get through. He says that's why the meal offering of a suspected wayward wife is made of barley. Most meal offerings are made from wheat. But since barley is a food for an animal, so we give that as a meal offering. Like, isn't it better to stand there with a sign? So he said, no. People will look at the meal offering and they'll say, oh, this is barley. And immediately there'll be a subconscious association. That's what the Torah is looking for. That's what he said, a blessed memory. So it's very often we have to be careful about not just what we say, but how we say it. Another example of this would be tone of voice. That's subliminal, it's nonverbal. You'll say to someone, I love you. I love you. It's dangerous. It damages. Because the message, the verbal message, what's the difference what words I use? But it's the tone of voice and the facial expression that comes across. Now, this is especially true for children because their verbal antennas are less developed than the nonverbal ones. When parents talk to children in a frustrated, angry way, so they're telling their children what they think of them or how they're annoyed with them, and that's a much more powerful message than the words they're using. That's why I tell mothers, have a good night's sleep, as much as you can. Some mothers are in a time of life where they're not going to get a good night's sleep, and that's Hashem's blessing, that they don't get a good night's sleep. But you have to eat properly. You have to take care of yourself. The Rosh Yeshiva Zecher Levroch Rav Scheinberg used to say, Vayehi erev, vayehi voker. And it was evening and it was morning. So what do you see? The day begins with the night before. And I was in Toronto, and I mentioned what the Rosh Yeshiva had said. And one of the Rosh Yeshivas came up to me and said, you know, there's an accounting that was supposed to make 100 blessings, 100 brachas a day. The first of those is Hamapil. The first bracha of the day is the bracha you make before going to sleep. So it's important to be fed, hydrated, and rested. If you're a husband, before you come home, you take an apple and you eat it. It's a complex carbohydrate. Don't come home hungry. I was told afterwards that Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky said the same thing. So our introduction to our subject is that the ability to understand what's beneath the surface is very important to understanding life. That's the first reason why we have to be able to look under the surface, because under the surface talks to us. And the other reason is that when you have a problem, the very first question you need to ask is, why? Sometimes things are not a problem, even though you may think they are. You may be tired, and then you realize that you only slept 3 hours last night. So there isn't any deep psychological reason for your tiredness. It's not burnout. It's you didn't sleep enough. So ask why. I'm just going to give you a short example, and then we'll get to the subject that I thought about teaching you and learning with you. Some years ago, there was a child in school, in Cheder, in what you call primary school in Jerusalem. And for 3 years, he did beautifully. The fourth year, he sank. And what happened? They finally realized that in Jerusalem, in Yerushalayim, they sit in a U shape. This boy was deaf in one ear. For 3 years, he was sitting with his good ear to the Rebbe. That fourth year, he was sitting with his poor ear, with his silent ear, his non-functional ear. Now, I'm not saying that these things happen every day, but ask why. Reb Chaim Friedlander, of blessed memory, Zecheinu Levracha, said, when Bilam started to hit his donkey, so the donkey said to him, do I do this to you every day? And he said, no. So maybe ask why. There's a change. Something happened. So ask why. So the second reason why you need to know things that are beneath the surface, because often the why is beneath the surface. So we have said two things. One is, what's beneath the surface needs to be understood and reckoned with, because it has a very powerful effect on the person, because the person's conscious does not cannot push it away, which is why subliminal advertising is illegal. And the other is, learn to look at things beneath the surface, because often the answers to the problems and challenges that you have lay beneath the surface. I told them this morning at breakfast that I went to a natural doctor, and he asked me to find out my blood type. So when I came for the blood test in Israel, so this person, this male nurse, David, said he knows me, and he said to me, you went to a natural doctor, in a very accusing way, like that was heretical of you to do it. So I said, how did you know? He says, you need to know your blood type. Why do a Western doctor won't ask about your blood type? But you know something? If you know your blood type, sometimes the foods that agree with you will be different. An A or a B or an O is different. Now, I'm not here to give you that message. All I'm here to show you is that sometimes we need to understand why. People want to know why they sleep so much on Shabbos. The answer is Charlotte. Yeah? That's the reason. Yeah? Okay. We need to translate two words in Hebrew that are going to be the key to understanding our subject and are directly related to what we just said. Hod means an inner beauty. Hodar means an external beauty. Now, I want to take a very few minutes to show this. This appears in the Malbim, And I believe the Goyim says it also. We just take a few minutes to show you that this is coming from very strong places. And there are many things you'll understand if you know the difference between these two words. Hadar kivayt haydecha. The outer beauty of Hashem we could see. And that outer beauty is kivayt haydecha, is the honor of your hide. I know from your external beauty that there's inner beauty. There was years ago, in the early 1980s, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky flew to Chicago. When he got off the plane, it was before September 11th, 2001, they allowed for people to come and greet him. When he was getting off the plane, the stewardess saw what was happening, and she said, "I knew it! I knew this was a special man." He had a hadras panim. That external beauty was indicative of an internal beauty that he had. Stewardesses, as we call them today, flight attendants, they are from the greatest psychologists in the world, right after taxi drivers in Jerusalem. I tell these people, you meet more lunatics in one day than a psychiatrist meets in a month. They understand. She saw a hadras panim. She saw it. The external beauty. Now, an estrog is called a pre-ace hodar. It's called the citron, the etrog, is called a fruit that has hadar to it, external beauty. Because the value of an estrog isn't how juicy it is and how tangy it is. It's how does it look on the outside. Now, I want to focus on a particular part of the davening. It says, Yachad kulam hoidu v'himlichu v'omru. At the splitting of the Red Sea, they came together and hoidu, they gave a praise to Hashem of hoidoya, of a praise to His inner glory. What does this mean? So Rabbi Sokutna, Zechet Tzadik Livrocha, said, the word hoid comes from hoidoas baldin. Hoidoas baldin means you have two litigants, and each one thinks he's right. That's a big rule in life. Everyone thinks they're right. That's why I tell parents, don't take sides in an argument. Because everyone thinks they're right. When this five-year-old hits his three-year-old, you can't hit it in our house. We have to find other solutions. But don't come down on him. Why? Because he thinks he's right. Why? My sister looked at my Lego yesterday. She just looked at it. You know, I really come to our Abba Mises together. But I'm being Merachim, I'm having mercy, and I'm not going to do anything really fatal to her. But she has to know not to look at my Lego. Yeah? Because if you come down on one side, that child, and a little light bulb will light up in his five-year-old brain and say, my mother loves my younger sister more than she loves me. And when he's eight, it's a foregone conclusion. He doesn't even remember why. So most people come to court. Litigants have decided they're right. But when one of the sides is moder, he agrees, you know what's happening then? He took a deeper look inside and he realized he had made a mistake. Hoidu means to look in the depth of something. Rav Tzadik, one of the great Hasidic thinkers at the beginning of the 20th century, the end of the 19th century, said, Lag Ba'omer, when we celebrate the Seydis HaTaira, I'm not sure how to translate that. Seydis are not secrets. There are no secrets in Taira. Because, this is my Rebbe, Zechet Sadat Gerocher, Rav Simcha Wasserman said, there are no secrets in Taira. We may not be up to it yet. There was a Beis Medrash in Sorotskin Street, where I live, that it's called Tfilin L'Moshe. And on the door, there's a lock which you have to punch out numbers in order to open the door. So on top of it, it says, Soid HaKnisa, the secret to coming in. Yeah? Bitachon, Beis Tes Chesnun, B'mak. B'mak means, if you know, it's B'mispar Katan. What that means is, normally, when we evaluate the value of letters, Hey is 5, Nun is 50, But there's another way of figuring it out where you drop the zeros. A nun is also five. So he's telling me how to get into this locked door. What good is the lock if he's telling me how to get in? The answer is, if I know what b'mak means, please come in. It's not a secret. To me, it's not a secret. And, you know, I have my credit card number in Yiddish and a few other ways of... You can look at it, you won't figure out what it means. I don't know how many people here know what year George Washington's inauguration was. Okay? It was 1789. Yeah? After we kicked out the British. Okay? Yeah, I made this joke once in England, and they didn't mind, in the Jewish free school, I think it was. In Mexico, I made a thing about you lost the Mexican War, so that was 1845. They said, let's not talk about it, we're still sensitive about it. But you've recovered. Yeah. So, it's not a secret. It's not a secret. So, when we call mysticism, we're not talking about secrets. But when it's the inner beauty of Torah. But there's an inner beauty that surrounds that, which is called Torah Shebaal Peh, the oral law. The external beauty of Torah is the written law. The underlying beauty of the Torah is the oral law. Inside the oral law, the Torah Shebaal Peh, there's also another beauty, which we call Jewish sight, which is wrongly translated as secrets of the Torah. It's the Kabbalah, they call it. So when was Reb Shimon ben Yochai Nifter? When did Reb Shimon ben Yochai, who is the one who gave us the Zohar? On Hoyd Shebohoyd. When you count the Omer, every day has a different thing tacked on, which time does not allow us to explain. But so over there it says, the inner beauty of the inner beauty. Kulam haidu v'himlichu v'amru. All of them at the splitting of the Red Sea said they were haidu. What's going on over there? What does it mean? So I think we can understand it like this. When they came to the Red Sea, so they said to Moshe, Hamibli ain't kvarim b'mitzrayim? There aren't enough graves in Egypt. They have the devil, Pharaoh, chasing them down. They have the desert on another side, wild animals on another side, and the deep Red Sea on the other side. They were stuck. They were done. And they complained, understandably. After Kriyas Yamsuf, after the splitting of the Red Sea, Hoidu, they admitted they made a mistake. It was good what happened. We are stuck into a terrible situation, and now we realize that it was far good. There was a Hidoiz Baldin, the litigation with Hashem. They realized, and we made a mistake, it was really far good. That's the word Haidu. Okay? Haidu v'himlichu v'amru. They coronated Hashem. In order to coronate Hashem, it's Rosh Chodesh Elul. We are now beginning the path of coming to Rosh Hashanah. Now, Rav Shlomo Volbe told me that I need to be ready for Rosh Hashanah on Rosh Chodesh Elul. So every Rosh Chodesh Elul, I'm depressed. Okay, but let me share with you something very important. You have elections in a country. In some countries, there are actually fair elections. F-A-I-R. Elections. When you're happy with the administration, so you re-elect them. When you're unhappy with the administration, so you try and vote them out. Is that correct? We are telling HaKadosh Baruch Hu on Rosh Hashanah, we want you to be Melech. We're Malach you. Rav Hutna said that the Kriya Shema, we say the Shema every day, we're declaring that Hashem is a king. On Rosh Hashanah, he said, we're coronating him. We're renewing that he's the king. But that's only if we think it's a good administration. If it's not a good administration, we would really like to change the administration. Which is like, you know, we're not supposed to think that, right? In order to do the mitzvah of coronating Hashem and Rosh Hashanah, you have to think that he's a good king, and that it's a good world. And that's Hoidu v'him lichu v'omru. First, they had to realize that Hashem's with me. And when he does things for me that seem to be negative, wait, it's going to be good. Rav Shlomo Brevda Zecher Tzadik Livracha, who was known in London, Rav Chasko Levinstein, his mashgiach, taught him, he said, you want to learn how to trust Hashem? Keep an accounting of all the things that happened to you that you thought were bad and turned out to be the best. Keep a record of it. So when something comes that is not exactly to your taste, wait, we've been here before, it's good. This is a very important point to be able to coronate Hashem. Now, we're also going to speak about a home is also a country. Is it a good country? Is it a place where a child wants to be? Now, there are many wonderful good Jews in Mexico, but the Mexican army is not guarding the border to prevent Americans from infiltrating into Mexico. They're just not worried about it. And England, North African continent, is not worried about protecting its border from Englishmen who want to emigrate to Algeria. They're just not worried about it, because you don't want to leave from a good place. A home is a good world. It's a happy world. People ask constantly, what are you going to do about the street? And you know, it's a problem. It's true, it's a problem. But one of the mainstays is that if that child knows that the country I live in, the home I live in, is a good place, and we take a very few minutes to try and talk about that, but is it a good world or is it not a good world? The bottom line in Judaism is this: I am good. Neshama shenasate bi tahirihi. The neshama, the soul that you placed in me, is pure. And Hashem is a melech ha-chesed. He loves us. He cares for us. That's why we want judgment. Tam lichuni aleichem. Declare me to be melech. There are two words in Hebrew, which the Goyim and the Malbim both say. Melech is someone who reigns, a sovereign, who reigns because the people want him. A Moshel is a dictator. So the brother said to Joseph, Hamolech Timloch Aleinu, you think we're going to accept you as king? And if not, Moshel Timshulbag, you're going to be our dictator? Ki Hashem Hamalucha. Hashem is really a melech. He's a king who reigns. He's a king of chesed, of kindliness. U'moshel bagoyim. But by goyim, he's a moshel. They don't want him. They want to be free. They want to do what they want. So we declare Hashem is melech. But the bottom line attitude, mindset, you need to have it, that it's a good world. And that he loves me. Now, in the time allotted to me, I want to give you a few examples of this. And just want to also teach you, we say, Malchus Zechreinus Shifres. There are three things that we declare on Rosh Hashanah. One is Hashem's Melech. He's a good king. It's a good world. Now, when I believe that's the order. What I'm telling you. Zechreinus means there's reward and punishment. Rabbi Yosef Alba, one of the great Spanish thinkers, said there are three principles in Judaism. One is God, there is a creator. This world didn't happen by itself. Secondly, there's reward and punishment. And thirdly, God will teach us how to live correctly. We're not in some kind of maze and, you know, go figure it out. We're going to be taught. If you know Hashem is Melech, that he's good, then his Zechreinus, his reward and punishment, is also good. And his Shofres, and the Shofar of Mount Sinai, of the Torah, is also good. But it depends where you're starting from. I came to this country, it's a wonderful country. It's a few times ago when I was here, I was coming into an elevator bank, a lift bank, I don't know what you call it here, where people come with their trolleys from the airport. So I said, in a stage whisper, I have come to a courteous country, I have to now go to the back of the lift, said, to allow people in. So a Brit says to me, how often do you come? So I said, about once a year. He said, well, maybe you should come more often. Yeah? Fine, that's terrific. A lot of wonderful people here. I come to the border, and he asked me, how long are you going to be here for? When are you leaving? In fact, it says in the passport, leave to enter, which to an American means I'm leaving in order to enter. Huh? How do you leave in order to enter? Until I realized that leave to enter means permission to enter. But that's how you greet a guest? When are you leaving? You know why? Because it's not my place. A citizen of a country in Aramaic is called Yatsiva. A Yatsiva is a person who's stable. Because I'm in my place. I don't have to constantly renew my visa. We are citizens of Gan Eden. Gehenim, Hashem should protect us, but they kick you out. You need a visa. They kick you out. Gan Eden, paradise is forever and ever and ever. Why? Because we're citizens of Gan Eden. We are good. The Abundant created a good world. We are not condemned to eternal damnation unless. It's a good world. Neshama shenasadi b'tahira. You gave me a pure soul. This is the beginning of understanding what Judaism says and what kind of world we have. And the same is true in the world of a home. Our child has to know that we look at him favorably. And as we began, our nonverbal messages are far more powerful than our verbal ones. So when you tell a child, make sure to put your coat on, so he's getting a message that my father doesn't think I'm that capable. Do you know something? Children believe you. If they feel that their parents think that they're not capable or they're not good, they will accept that as fact. An adult has enough of an inside to push back. Someone says to me, dirty Jew, I don't go home and take a shower. I don't come and take a shower. It's not a problem for me. But a child is vulnerable because it hasn't developed yet an inner world. So one of the first jobs of your kingdom, in your world, in your home, that child has to know that they are appreciated, loved, accepted. Sometimes, of course, there's a thing called discipline. There are things. Every country has its rules, right? Now, I've been here 2 days. You know how many almost crashes we were in when someone's driving me? You know, like, gosh. So, because the left side. Yeah? Left side of the road. And I think, oh boy, here goes. He's going into the guy. It's a country that has rules. And they say to you in the airport, look right, it doesn't mean straighten your tie. It means look right. On Brent Street, I was almost killed. And I said to him, American. He says, he won't help you any. A country has rules. Is it a good country or not a good country? Is it a nice place to be or is it not a nice place to be? Now, the word enjoy is a word that's overused. It's crept into our society from the outside. Rabbi, I enjoyed your shir. I hope you enjoyed my shir. Because then it goes in. But you didn't come here for enjoyment. You came here for a reason. Part of the reason is, I want to learn Torah. For harevna, when it's sweet, it goes in. That's terrific. It's good to enjoy it. I make an attempt that you should enjoy it. But that's not the function. So we have to know the world of the home is a place where people enjoy being. They want to be there. They don't want to go on. You can't compete with the street. There's a big rule in marketing. You compete where you're strong, not where you're weak. There's one father and one mother, and by the way, one grandfather, two grandfathers and two grandmothers, in todo el mundo, in the whole world. That's right. And you have a function. And there's no competition. And the same thing with Rosh Hashanah. We know, Haidu v'him lichu v'omru. At the Red Sea, we said, Hashem, we agree, we understand what we thought before, that we were ill-treated, there were not enough graves in Egypt. No, it was good. It's a good world. And therefore we declare in Rosh Hashanah, Hashem Melech, Hashem is king, and we want him to be king, and we want to be his servants.